places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello, and welcome to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio on the campus of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I'm Chris Hicks, and joining me today as co-host is the multi-talented Alicia Haynes, and we are recording today on an absolutely beautiful October 25th. Thank you, Alicia, for sitting in with me today.
Thank you for having me.
And our guest today is someone I know nothing about, but has me fascinated when I see her credits in the programs of local shows, because not only is she a talented actor, she is a certified fight choreographer and intimacy coach, a relatively new thing in our local theater. So welcome, Lily Blauen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I really want to get into the fight and intimacy stuff, but let's get your background first. So go back as far as you want. Tell me as much as you can, like, you know, your social security number, your bank accounts, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I feel like I need to take you all the way back to the beginning.
Good.
Because that might explain a little bit about who I am now. So I was born in Florida. And when I was about four, my mother, father, and brother and I moved to Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, my gosh.
And in a job interview one time, when I told them that, they said, so you are used to extremes. And a lot of my life story kind of feels like that jump, that move across the country from Florida to Alaska. I grew up in Alaska mostly, and then found myself in Illinois when I decided to go to college at Western Illinois University.
All the way from Alaska.
Yep.
How did you find Western Illinois University?
Well, I was just starting out on my stage combat journey. I was invited to participate in the Renaissance Festival in Alaska and was part of what we called the fight show. So if anybody's seen Harry Potter and you know the scene where they're on the chessboard and they move and they play chess and then there's like a fight that happens to see who wins, we used to do that in real life. We were in costumes, we were on a chessboard on the ground, and then if I was a queen, which I often was, and I came across a pawn, we would have a fight, and whoever won the fight took the square. So this was our living chess battle. So I started getting really curious about stage combat and staged violence and fighting, and there was a workshop being hosted at the UAA, University of Alaska, University of Anchorage, Alaska. And it was a historical broadsword for stage class. And it was being taught by certified teacher D.C. Wright, who happens to be the head of movement at Western Illinois University.
Oh.
And I loved the class. I told him I was looking at colleges. I had just graduated high school, was taking some time off. And he said, well, you should come check our program out. I knew I wanted to study musical theater or history. And my dad and I flew out to Chicago, took a train to Macomb, and I just fell in love with the program and the people, and then I got in. So that was the more important part.
Now, you want to hear something creepy, spooky?
Yeah.
I graduated from Western.
You did?
In theater with a history minor.
Oh, you did? That's awesome. That's so great. I love it.
Only I was very lucky because the year I graduated, which was, you know, back when the dinosaurs were around, Western, by the first part of the year, it was the speech and communications department. Mm-hmm. Halfway through the year, they decided to split. And I could have chosen a theater major. Mm-hmm. Or a speech and communication arts. The smartest thing I did was take the speech and communication arts because it looked a lot better on resumes.
Yeah.
So, but did you do theater when you were younger then?
I got into theater late. Well, I'll say this. Yes, but in a church setting. So my grandparents were the youth ministers at their church. We were always doing their
So your
pageants,
grandparents were in
plays.
Alaska?
They were in Florida. So when we would go visit, and I remember when I was really young, like we would, you know, we were going to church doing the Christmas shows, and we were a big musical family. So my grandma would get us and all the cousins out, and she had a whole... she had a shed full of costumes
because
of all the things she was doing with the church. And we would get all dressed up and walk around the neighborhood and sing like Christmas carols. And so if there was some kind of pageant going on at church, we were involved in that. I didn't get involved in like community or school theater though until I was in junior high, until seventh grade.
And that was... In Alaska.
No, that,
no?
that was
when
it.
When did you move to Alaska? You said you grew up in Alaska.
I did. So it's complicated. We moved to Alaska when I was 4. And when I was about 10, my mom moved to New Jersey. And I went with her for 2 years. So there's a 2-year period of time in middle school where I was in New Jersey.
Oh, my goodness.
And so when I was in school, they were doing a production of Stand By Me, which is just like the movie. And I got cast in the show, and that was my first time ever being on stage that wasn't in a church setting. And I really liked it. I thought I was going to grow up to be a jazz singer. That was my original goal. That's what I wanted to do. Or a singing evangelist. I wanted to sing. I didn't really know a lot about theater outside of, again, church pageants. So I got to do that play. I went to high school, and they were doing a production of The Sound of Music. And I auditioned and got the role of the Mother Abbess in high school. And... kind of the rest is history. I started doing everything I could in theater. I got cast in a performance of Once Upon a Mattress as the jester. And
I haven't seen that for years.
That's a great... Well, it's back on Broadway
and
right now.
And even then, I think it was the Carol Burnett one that was on TV.
Yep.
So
I've never seen it
in live theater.
If you go to New York right now, Sutton Foster's doing it on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think I'll be going to New York.
Me either. Yeah. But it really wasn't until high school that I got involved in theater. And then I started getting involved in community theater. That's how I got into stage combat. I got cast in a show called Pirates that was written and directed by this local theater company. And I got to play Anne Bonny, and there were like 7 sword fights in the show. And
I was
the main character. Like, so I was playing this really strong woman who leaves her husband because he's abusive, and she finds herself on a pirate ship with a ragtag gang of pirates.
And I want to assure all our listeners that despite her combative background, she is a very attractive young woman who does not look at all aggressive.
Thank you.
I'm not in fear of my life. So since you brought it up,
yeah.
Now we may go back because I'm very, you know, squirrel.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. So you went to Western, and that's where you learned stage combat. Take us through that, because I have seen some... really excellent stage combat. And I've seen some really bad stage combat. So take us through that process and develop it for us.
Sure. So there's a lot of different pieces that go into staging violence. And there's a lot of factors that kind of play into what it looks like on the stage. So first and foremost is the script and characters around it. Is it, like any show, is it a well-written script? Does the violence make sense? Then we have a fight director, fight choreographer, violence designer, different titles that people use to basically describe the same thing, which is somebody who comes in and choreographs a sequence of movement between 2 or more actors that simulates the illusion of violence. So your training as a fight choreographer starts typically as a actor combatant. So that's where I started. At Western, I got to take a class every semester where we were dealing with up to three weapon styles. So it starts with unarmed combat. You're thinking punches, kicks, chokes, hair pulls. This is the bread and butter of what we use the most. Then we go into sword fighting, rapier and dagger, broadsword, quarterstaff, sword, swashbuckling. If you're there long enough, you'll go through some prop firearms training for stage weaponry, so on and so forth. And hopefully that gives you the tools that you need so when you find yourself in a show with violence, just like a good actor with good techniques and tools, a fight director can kind of use you to the best of your ability. So when a fight director comes in, they're really working with the actors in the same way the director is, or the same way that a dance choreographer might in a musical. We just don't typically have music underscoring what we're doing, although sometimes we're lucky enough to. I personally love that, but that's because I have a musical background.
I have to say that's quite on two ends of the spectrum, musical on one end and combat on the other.
Well, I got into, through music theater, I got into dance and had the opportunity to teach tap when I was in college. I was the TA for my tap teacher, and then I'm still teaching tap now. And so I've always liked the idea of storytelling through movement. And to me, stage combat was really just an extension of that. So, you know, once you go through all that training as a combatant, you now have tools that you can apply to teach others. Some people, just like anything, are better than others at teaching it. Sometimes people are better than others at learning it. How much time you have can determine how good, you know, and because stage combat has definitely been, I think, more widely accepted for longer than intimacy direction has, but it's still pretty new too, to have some, you know, to not just have two actors on stage who are trained sword fighters just making it up as they go, which is what you would see like Battle Wrathbone and, you know, Errol Flynn doing when they were fighting.
I was just looking for the program for our listeners. The last weekend, two plays opened. Mm-hmm. One of which was the tapes at the Sound Conservatory. Do I remember that your name was in there for?
Yep.
Okay. I'm sure it's nothing. I talk about that first initial, you know, like pulling hair and, and because I didn't think one of the punches looked, I mean, it was a big whiff that the audience could see.
Sometimes, so there's a lot of things that are out of your control, right, once you teach it. So we'll say that. Theater is a live art, so it might have looked the day before perfect, and then depending on where the actors ended up in that moment, it didn't look great. The trick of smaller venues like that and ones that have an audience on two sides, of course, is that we lose. It gets a little trickier to mask the trick, right, or the magic or the illusion.
For one thing, the audience is much closer.
Yes. So when you're in a traditional proscenium theater, it's pretty easy to stack an actor and allow the pathway of a punch, say, to begin in the visual perception of the audience, pass through the plane of your partner's face, you know, what looks like it's passing through the plane of the face, and then, the audience sees the hand on the other side, right? That's how we describe a slap, right? We present a cue, we make sure the audience sees it. Right now, I'm picking my hand up like I'm waving. It's just at my shoulder length. And then I would extend my hand on a diagonal across my partner's sternum, for example, and then it would end in the plane of where their head is. So the audience sees the beginning and the end, and the brain kind of fills in the rest. This can be applied to a lot of things. Now, typically, almost never, there's no contact happening. There are fight directors that will teach contact slaps. There are more seasoned actors that are used to having been asked to do that, so we'll still do that. And that's kind of an ongoing debate in the field we can come back to if we want. So it's pretty easy, though, when you're in a proscenium, audience is on one side, to hide that trick.
Right.
When the audience is closer, it gets a little harder depending on how wide your audience is. And like in the tapes, if you have audience...
It was kind of a V shape.
Yep, if your audience is on two sides, there's really a one sweet spot where we can sell a moment. So I would imagine in that moment, it was just a matter of actors didn't end up maybe exactly where they needed to be. And there's a lot happening.
Well, I probably should let our listeners know. No, so because we've been talking about placement and venue and stuff, and they don't know what we're talking
about. Right, yeah.
The production we're talking about, the tapes, is a theater form called immersive theater. And that means that the audience is not a passive, sitting-in-seats listener, but almost an active participant. Well, I was an active participant because I was taken aside and given a password and told to talk to a certain character in the show. And so the audience is moving through the acting action.
Yep.
And so that's why we're saying that it was harder to hide, I guess, is the way to say it.
Yeah, and you were talking about kind of you've seen good and you've seen bad. And again, you come in and you take some time, you know, you work with actors, you teach them the basic technique. Sometimes it comes naturally and sometimes it doesn't, right? Just like any set of coordination.
And sometimes you have egos that don't think they need to rehearse it.
Yep, that's true. Sometimes. Yeah. Now, I say sometimes you don't have a lot of time. Their production team and Ben at Rock Island Tunnel Co. were really great about bringing me in really early, particularly because there's a prop firearm that's used in the show. And so we wanted to make sure that the cast was really comfortable with that early on and that everybody understood the rules of the game.
Oh, that's right. There was a gunshot in that show.
Yep. That's Alice. That's my gun, Alice. My prop firearm. So that was really nice, but again, it's just some things come naturally, more naturally to people than others, and at the end of the day, you still only have a few weeks to master something I've been doing for 20 years, and, you know, they've only been doing for 2 weeks now. And then, of course, once you have the emotions on stage and the audience, you never know what's going to happen, right? So much has to go right for that to work when you have limited visual options there. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we hope the audience knows. We don't want it to be so obvious that it takes them out of the moment. We know that it can happen. But at the end of the day, the audience knows that it isn't real. So as long as nobody gets hurt, I would rather it look bad. That's my way of saying I would rather them whiff it than...
When you come out of the show and you can say, no one died.
Yeah. I mean, truly, they're not doing anything that's going to make that likely. But I would rather you see the whiff than you see somebody actually get hit in the face with a clock, I assume. That's...
I understand.
Yes.
Now, something you also mentioned that kind of struck me... Mm-hmm. Hair pulling.
Yes. It's so common.
Well,
on stage.
If it's a girl fight, too.
Yes. Hair pulling is it's a well-known act that everybody can relate to in terms of somebody's probably experienced it at some point. It's easy for actors to access the imitation of the memory, right? Like, what is it like to have that happen? And it's fairly simple to do. It uses a key tenet. So in that one, we're actually making contact. So it's not like a punch where if we can, what we're doing is hiding the distance between our fighters. But instead, we're creating the illusion of control in the aggressor, but we're actually giving it to the victim. So if I were to pull your hair...
It would
stage,
be harder because there's no control.
It doesn't matter. I place my hand on your back. I would trace it up to your head so you knew I was behind you if we were doing it from behind, which is commonly how hair pulls occur on stage. I'd bring my hand up, and then I would essentially bend my fingers as if you were holding an apple almost like you're holding an apple. Mm-hmm. So there's a bend in maybe the first and second knuckles, but your fist isn't closed. So I've got your hair between my fingers, but at any moment, Chris, you could pull away and remove yourself from contact with my hands.
So it's actually the person who is supposedly getting their hair pulled, mm-hmm. who is directing or going the direction they need to go.
Yep. Okay. So a hand comes up, it's placed on the head. We, you know, bend the fingers to make it look like we're grasping hair. We usually ask the person whose hair is being pulled to take one hand and place it on the aggressor's hand. So if you were pulling my hair, I'd be pulling your hand into my head.
Ah.
And then I would be moving as if you were pulling my hair. And that would be choreographed. We wouldn't guess that. You know, we would say usually it's a really good way to sell that is there's a movement down where the face goes down towards the floor and a sharp react where the head goes back.
Right.
To simulate the grab. And then either it's, you know, the victim dropping to their knees or maybe they're moving side to side. But the one who is having their hair pulled is the one who's doing that. And the aggressor is just
that almost sounds
along.
More difficult than a sword fight.
It's tricky. Yeah, it's hard to, those very intimate, tricky things. And you've got to be really close because the farther away you are, the less control everybody has. So that's an element that people can kind of be uncomfortable with. But then, you know, what that allows us to do is then if at any point the person who's supposedly getting their hair pulled, if they feel unsafe, unsure, they are in control. They can remove themselves from that situation. And it helps protect them. And we find that it helps tell really good stories.
Now, since we're on that subject, mm-hmm. you just appeared in Of Mice and Men mm-hmm. at Richmond Hill, and your hair was involved. Mm-hmm. Now, from where I was sitting, I can't remember the character's name. Was it Willie?
Lenny.
Lenny.
Yeah.
Big bulking
yeah.
guy, so
like
I couldn't,
6'4".
I
yeah,
couldn't see through his body.
Yeah.
So is that what was happening with you?
Yep. Yep. He came and he wrapped his arms around my biceps, put his hand on my hair, pretended to grab a hairful, and I put my hand on top of his, and then I was the one directing all of the action.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Now I know the tricks.
Because I think everybody listening is probably at home visioning.
I hope so.
Because I was there. I'm like
yeah.
trying to stop myself from picturing how to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you sell this part of things as something that is necessary? I've been in multiple productions that really could have used some kind of direction, and I don't necessarily know that people recognize the importance of having the correct choreography or having someone that is a professional come in and kind of show everyone. So how do you kind of let people know this needs to happen?
I mean, just as an industry, we really try to just get the word out. It's helpful. We don't like to glorify the things that go wrong, but I think most people who've done community theater experienced or witnessed stage combat gone wrong. And it can happen even with trained professionals. It does happen, again, because live theater is so precocious, but it's more likely when things aren't choreographed. And if you think about how meticulous and precise every other element of a show is, it's so silly to us in the industry, in stage combat industry, that we have to work so hard to try and advocate for it, because no director would ever just say, do it, you know, for the whole show, do whatever you want. We're working together in purpose, you know, in service of a very specific story. And we know that certain distances between people, certain pictures tell a certain story. So Stage Combat 1 helps us tell the right story. Like Chris pointed out, if it goes wrong, it has the potential to take you out of the moment, and it's more likely to go wrong without somebody who's got choreography and not just looking bad, because I've seen a lot that looks bad because people are like, oh, I'll just do this.
Oh, no, I was thinking the other direction. Some of the not so great, mm-hmm. and usually it's a sword battle because I have a lot of background in Shakespeare, hesitancy.
Oh, yes.
That there's
real
like
fear.
The actors are too hesitant in
yes.
there.
So a couple of things cause that, but the first is actual fear. And just like you'd never want your actors to actually feel like they're in whatever experience they're having in the show, we don't actually want them to be afraid for their lives. And when they are, they can't fully commit to a moment. They also might not know what each other's doing. So if it's not choreographed and both actors aren't clear, then what you have is two people trying to guess what the other person's going to do while also trying to protect themselves from, in the case you gave, a pointed object, which usually professionals don't just come with training, but we have access to or know how to get a hold of actual stage combat weaponry. And, you know, swords that are made with certain metals are more likely to break. Swords that are made of wood can splinter. Swords that used to be real swords but have been dulled down were still made to have a blade, and the more you hit them against other metals become sharp or dinged and nicked. So we really just try to reassure people that we're not going to come in and do anything that doesn't serve your vision. But we want to keep your actors safe, and we want to help you tell the best story. And that's kind of how we help do that.
As you were talking about that, it mm-hmm. strikes me that this is also another form of intimacy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So now that is a segue, and we'll probably come back to the
fighting sure.
because I jump around a lot, but. So talk about being an intimacy coach.
Sure.
And before you get started, mm-hmm. the first time I saw a credit in a program for an intimacy coach was Barefoot in the Park at Playcrafters. Mm-hmm. Was that your show?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Well, like you just pointed out, stage combat and intimacy, stage combat is an intimate act. We're asking people to be close. We're asking them to simulate actions that require a great deal of vulnerability on stage and in real life. So, and again, it's an area of shows where most people who've done theater have a story or have witnessed one, but I guarantee that most women particularly have a story from some kind of show where they were told to kiss somebody and that was the direction they got. So I was told to take 4 steps to the table, to sit, to cross my legs, to put my hand up like I'm holding a glass. But then when I was asked to kiss somebody, this really important moment in the show, there was no direction, right?
Right.
So now it's two actors attempting to do something that's awkward in real life, but for pretend. They're asked
in front of people.
They're asked to interpret what a kiss is. And I know we all can define a kiss, but if I told you to kiss somebody, it's going to look different for every person. So now, just like we were talking about with the swords, you've got two people coming in and maybe one person's idea of a romantic kiss is different than another person's. That's an experience a lot of people have. I see Alicia laughing over there. So when we think about ourselves either in stage combat or intimacy, it's to tell the full story and to help equip directors and actors with tools that don't leave us in these really important moments where we're guessing. And so intimacy really just felt like an extension of that. And I've had a few scenarios where I was told to just kiss somebody, or they said, make it sexier or more romantic, or that's boring. And that doesn't mean anything. Those aren't really actionable to actors. So our job is to come in and first understand where people feel comfortable, because again, we want to meet people where they are. And so I mention that especially because while it's still true for adults, I do a lot of work with high school students, and we see this a lot, where high school students are just being asked to, okay, now you kiss. And I've been a part of this process, so we know better, we do better. But that could be their, like, what if that's this young man or woman or young person's first kiss ever?
Mm.
That could be a big deal. What if this adult or young individual has a history with physical violence or an issue with touch? this, we have an opportunity to come in and create a space where we can understand what they're bringing to the table. And we always like to say, there isn't a story we can't tell within your boundaries. And so coming in and asking, this is what has to happen. And good practices, you know, an easy practice for theaters to start is, and most already do this, but if there's a kiss in the show, first asking, like making that clear in auditions, there's a kiss. Are you comfortable with a kiss? Step one. The actors have to advocate and be responsible and advocate for themselves. So our
job. How can they say if they don't know who the other person is going to be cast?
Well, I do know that, because I'm working on Life Sucks right now at Playcrafters, and they have some kisses, and they did a really great thing where they had that in their audition, and then during callbacks, or when they put the cast list up, they reaffirmed that the person was comfortable with a stage kiss, and then also told them who was cast in that role, just in case there were like specific issues with people, and we know things happen in small communities and community theater.
It happens on the professional level.
It sure does.
I have a cousin who retired from WGBH in Boston, mm-hmm. and he tells a story about Daniel J. Trafanti, Hill Street Blues, and Tyne Daly. Mm-hmm. being cast as a husband and wife, and they absolutely hated each other. It was quite an experience directing them.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so, I mean, that's one thing you can do in case there's anything that really has to do with a person. But then, you know, our job as intimacy choreographers is to come in, find out what people are comfortable with, and really find out what they need. What support do you need to be able to do this? Our job is to advocate for the actors, so to essentially be a barrier between the power dynamics in the room, because directors have power. You've got young actors who are coming into spaces and grown actors coming into spaces where they want to be accepted, they want jobs, they want roles. And then you say, are you comfortable with a kiss? And you don't want to be the actor that's difficult, right? Mm-hmm. This doesn't just happen in theater. This is maybe old hat, but it happens a lot in theater. We want to be appeasing. Actors want to be, we want approval. We want to be loved. We want to be
applause.
Easy. Applause. Yeah, we want to be easy to work with because we've been told forever that that's how you get jobs. Be likable. And so part of the role is to come in and, you know, you work with the director and you say, okay, here's the moments I see. What are you envisioning? What does that look like? And then we go into the space and we find a way to tell that story without putting actors in situations that make them feel violated or unsafe, or that allow them to really perform instead of taking a moment where you're acting and now suddenly it is just you kissing the other person on the stage because you weren't given choreography or direction.
You actually choreograph a kiss?
Yes. Very specifically. And oh. I've heard over and over again that it neutralizes this. I mean, it's awkward. It's going to be awkward. But it neutralizes the uncomfortable aspects of it, because what we're coming in and doing is we're desexualizing the language, so we're not saying things like sexier, or, you know, we're trying to be like very clinical and anatomical. So I would say this kiss, you know, is going to be lip to lip contact or lip to cheek.
How romantic.
Yes. So we're really trying to like take that idea of this is a moment in a play that is two characters doing very specific movements. Because we want to tell this story. And again, like I was saying before, kisses tell different stories. So a quick 2-second kiss on the cheek tells a different story than a 4-second kiss even on the cheek, or a 1-second kiss on the lips versus a 4-second kiss on the lips. So we're coming in and we're trying to get a sense of what relationship are we trying to demonstrate, or what story do we need to tell? And then how can we break that down?
I never thought of it this way.
It was mind-blowing the first time I started getting into it, because I went, duh. It was one of those, like, why haven't we been doing that? We do everything else so meticulously. But we use a couple of tools. And when I go in, I do, like, a little intro for everybody where I try to I walk them through the tools we're going to use. So we do a boundary practice where we teach people kind of how to check in and say, here's places. It's called Fences and Gates, and essentially actors.
So these are exercises.
These are exercises.
You actually put the actors through before they ever lock lips.
Before we ever do anything.
Okay.
And usually we do it as a whole cast because it's good practice. It's something they can take with them. So we don't just want to help this show, but we want to help actors advocate for themselves and teach other companies. So one is Fences and Gates, where you have two actors partnered up, and one actor taps along their body on any part that they are comfortable being touched. And top of the head, ears. You'd be surprised what people aren't. So they go around, and then their partner just has to watch. And then at the end, the partner has to say, I noticed a gate. So this is a part of the body you didn't touch. I noticed a gate around your front upper chest. So that's our really anatomical, sterilized way of saying the bikini area. That's a common place. So they have to verbalize, oh, I noticed a gate here. I noticed a gate around your butt. I noticed a gate around your neck. And then we go into the next part where we offer, we ask if there are any fences. So fences are gated areas that have situational exceptions. For example, many people don't like contact with the front upper chest, but in a hug, that's different.
Yes.
So we talk about a common one is the neck. I have a gate on my neck. I don't like people touching my neck unless I know about it and I can see it coming or I have a very clear cue. So when I'm, and I'll use barefoot as an example, when I went in, these were actors that had worked together already in a previous show, and they were still kind of, we were there really early in the process, they were still figuring things out, and so instead of...
And they were so different physically.
Yes, but instead of, you know, we did some choreography, we kind of walked through some choreography, but what I tried to do was give them the tools that would allow them to communicate when they had ideas as for their characters, the way you would in blocking. Oh, I think my character might walk here. Well, now I know where your boundaries are. I know not to just come up to you in a scene and touch your neck because that's gonna make you uncomfortable. And you don't wanna be difficult, so you're not gonna tell me about it. You're just gonna be uncomfortable. But now I know not to do that unless I say, hey, I think my character would put their arm around your neck. Are you okay with that? And then you move on. It's that simple. We also use other like vocabs or descriptions that we use is the level of touch. So the training I have is through theatrical intimacy educators, and we use three levels of touch. So we have skin level, which would be like if you were brushing sand off of your skin. We have muscle level touch, which is like if you were painting or putting lotion on your skin. And then bone level, which is if you imagined your skin was clay and you were pressing into... Ooh. Into your, that's a way to think about it. And so we talk about level of touch. So if I want you to have lip to lip contact, I'm really specific about what to wear. I'm gonna say, let's try skin level touch. So this is a very light, sweet kiss that tells a specific story. If we wanted, you know, in the script, it's also, we often see the word like a passionate kiss. So we'll be like, well, let's try, instead of a director saying, I need more passion, a director could say, I need, can you try a deeper level of touch? Right now you're doing skin level. Can we try muscle level? We talk about where hands go, right?
Well, what strikes me about that, saying that as a, you know, a director mm-hmm. telling actors that, is that one actor's concept of muscle level and the other actor's concept of mm-hmm. muscle level could be two vastly different things.
So when I come in and I'm talking, we go through the boundaries and then I talk them through what I'm talking you through now. We go through and I show them, this is what I mean when I say skin level.
Oh,
this
okay.
is what I
okay.
mean when I say bone level. We also use time. So we're very specific, not kiss for a long time. In Life Sucks, there's a stage quote that says they kiss for a long and awkward time, longer than any stage kiss should be. Well, what does that mean, right?
Oh, my God.
So coming in and saying, okay, let's try a lip-to-lip contact. Lip-to-lip contact, we tell people, you know, whose head's going upstage, who's going downstage, so nobody's headbutting each other by accident. We say, actor A, I want you to put your hands on the low waist, you know, on the low back, if we've established that that's a place they're comfortable with. If not, then we'll find somewhere else. Partner B, you're going to put your hand on a cheek during this contact. Hand to cheek. You don't have to do that.
Those kind of kisses just turn. It's like, I've been married for 52 years, and I have never cupped my husband.
Never. But as an example, and then we say, so I want you to do that, and you're going to do it for five I like hippopotamuses because I say it out loud when we try it, and it also helps diffuse the situation a little. So it's, let's do a five count lip to lip kiss. So now everybody knows my lips kissing your, my lips are making contact with your lips. My head's going downstage, yours is going up, and I'm going to be here for five hippopotamuses. And now that's really clear. And if the director says, oh, that's too much or too little, now we can quantify it. And you say, can you try that 3 seconds? Can you try that 6 seconds, so that we have actionable things that we can use to get the story we want to tell.
Oh, man, you've just reduced this to such a clinical.
But I imagine that it would really be improving relationships between actors, because I think that a lot of times you could easily think someone's being creepy when they are thinking they're just getting into the role and being more.
Yes.
I imagine, because I was in a play where I was supposed to kiss the person, and it was traumatic for me to even think about, and I didn't read that far ahead mm-hmm. in the script mm-hmm. when I auditioned.
Yeah.
So, surprise. And I felt like that person was way more enthusiastic about yeah. this upcoming kiss than I was wanting to accept. And so then it just made it like, can I drop out at this point? Like, it was, and it's, now it's funny looking back, but I imagine sure. if there was, I mean, because it was just like, now the two of you kiss, and then everybody.
And now you know exactly what's going to happen.
And everyone watching.
And now you have a reference that, well, this isn't what we choreographed. So now you, at this point, it's just your fear. You don't know. So now it's all your fears coming into play. Or, you know, but when you have choreography, you can say, hey, this is only supposed to be a 6 second kiss. We're there a little long. Or we can go tell a stage manager, and it's not Dan's being creepy. It's, I thought we choreographed a 5 second kiss. Can you count that? It's feeling a little long and I'm feeling uncomfortable. You know, I was talking a little bit about the role of the choreographer and the fight and intimacy choreographer. First and foremost is to be an advocate for the performers. And one of the ways we do that is protecting, in both scenarios, the actor from the character. And like, we see this a lot, right? Showmances, sometimes they are really well received by both parties, and sometimes they're not. And that happens a lot because of unchoreographed intimacy, where one person, one actor, is confusing the actions of the character with the actions of the actor. And when you have a choreographed moment, it's very clear. They're kissing me because the director and choreographer said, kiss me for 5 seconds, not, they're really enthusiastic about it. Maybe they like me. And then we deal with, this is something I really try to protect, particularly with younger actors, because if they've never been kissed before, they don't have a lot of experience in relationships. And again, this doesn't just have to be youth, but it can get confusing. And so this is just one more tool that we can use to say, this is something that you're doing as your character, not Lily's kissing you, and now you have to wonder whether Lily really likes you and whether or not you're okay with that. Which I'm not smacking on showmances. If you fall in love with your co-star, that's great, but now you don't have to wonder, is my co-star in love with me? Are they being creepy? You don't have to wonder if you're giving the wrong
impression. Yeah, I was going to say, that's the other thing. Like, am I the one that someone thinks I'm creepy?
Right, exactly. We also do, like, there's an exercise that we can do, bookending. So we have, like, opening and closing. The one I like is actors who are in intense situations like that. For example, violence that is not fun. So swashbuckling violence, even if you're enemies, tends to be fun for the actors. But there is some violence in shows that's really intense. There's non-consensual violence. There's domestic violence that happens in shows. We saw that in Streetcar. And trying to be very, and it's uncomfortable for both actors typically, right? Because the actor who has to be what we would socially think as a monster or deplorable has to wrestle with what that feels like they're doing to their
partner. And how they're
partner.
Perceived.
Exactly. Yeah. And that can do real damage. That does have real psychophysiological impacts on the body. And so if we can minimize that, for example, by having a situation where we did this exactly for Streetcar, where those two actors at the beginning of, during intermission or at the beginning of the show would high-five each other. And they knew, like, from the high-five, they're acting. Anything that happens from here on out is not me, Lily. It's now my character. This also works for romantic things, right? You would also do this at the end, right? So once the show's over, you go, you high five. You can do whatever you want to bookend. But it's a ritual that allows the actors to disconnect and say, now I'm me, now I'm my character. Sometimes people just think, once my costume's on, and that, if that's what works for you, right, it's not about, we say TIE that we have tools, not rules. So I'm going to offer you tools that are going to help you be clear about the story you're trying to tell and what you're trying to communicate and what it looks like. But I'm not here to dictate what you're comfortable with and what you need. I'm here to make sure you have what you need and that you get what you need and that you feel like you can ask for it, whatever that is. Again, if that's a closing ceremony, if that's a modesty garment, if you have to do something that is like simulated nudity on, you know, that you have the tools that you need. And again, not to come in and take the role from the director, but to work with them and say, what do you want? You don't just want any kiss, do you? You want to tell a story, right? So let's use these tools that we have, and let's tell a good story.
This has just absolutely blown my mind. I'm just wrapped with it. Now, the bad news is that you will be moving from the Quad Cities before too long.
Yeah.
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 Are you the only coach in the Quad Cities?
No. I know that Jacqueline Isaacson, she's an Augie alum. And I think got support for her their training through the school, which is really awesome. Don't quote me on that, but that's my third-party understanding. Oh. Not that it was taught here, but that Augustana supported their...
Sounds like something that would be a good thing for Augie to start a course in.
It would be. So as far as I know, that's the only person I know who's gone through formal training. I'm just throwing names out here. There are a few people that have done it.
The person you just mentioned.
Yes.
Is it both intimacy and stage combat?
No.
Just intimacy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably that's the more common thread between shows.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow.
There's probably more. There's probably more out there. I just, hopefully they don't mind I threw their name out. But I'm sure there are more. And if you're interested in it, there's a really great book called Staging Sex by Chelsea Pace that goes through all of these exercises. You can get it.
Say again, stage.
Staging Sex.
Oh, staging.
Mm-hmm. Really great book. Written by Chelsea Pace, who's one of the founders of Theatrical Intimacy Educators, through TIE or Intimacy Directors and Coordinators or IDC professionals. Both have online courses that you can take. Through IDC, you could go through full certification. There's also Intimacy Directors International. So it's still a budding industry, but there are resources out there that are available to you, and you can pick up the book and read it and get started. Even just incorporating one or two things can help you tell a better story, can help you be a good advocate for your actors and help prevent some of those awkward or unsafe, if we're talking about stage fighting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we're going to get a little down and dirty.
Okay.
Using no names.
Okay.
Tell us your most horrid story, coaching intimacy.
What do you mean? I'm gonna need clarity. I haven't had any bad experiences since I started training.
Let's say most difficult.
Mm. I think most difficult so far has been streetcar, honestly, because it's non-consensual intimacy. It's intimacy where the actors have consented, but we have to stage not only things that look and feel uncomfortable, but
and that type of
and it's violent too. It's not just
yeah, it's violent, and it's also something that has I want to say grown in recognized as being horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, people a generation or so ago, that was just accepted.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and now it's such a stigma.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was a hard one because you don't want it to come into a space and to be the one that has to neutralize the emotions in the room. That's a tough one because that's one that like you said, it has a lot of prominence socially right now. And a lot of people have a story. So it's not just coming in and struggling with the reality of what we're putting on the stage and how awful that is, but, you know, wanting to make sure that we're not causing secondhand trauma to our actor who's going through it. And then wondering about the audience. Right. There, you know, it's that question of, like, gratuitous. Is it serving
us? It is far
this?
More pervasive than any of us realize, I think.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, I thought ours was pretty tame compared to some that I've seen in the production where, you know, he doesn't carry her off stage, but instead, like, keeps her on stage through the act.
Oh.
It's, and I'm glad that we didn't, you know, we decided that didn't make sense. That didn't serve the story we were telling. It might have if we were telling it in a different way.
It would almost be prurient.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we think about that with violence too. And it's easier with intimacy to dial yourself back. With violence, it's a little harder because usually when you're coming in as a fight director, you grew up in Renaissance fairs and you like pirates and you like playing with swords. And so you're like, oh, fight. Yeah, let's fight. And you have to remember, you know, you have to pull yourself back sometimes and think, am I just putting this in because it looks cool? Are we fighting to fight? Or is there something that's important in this moment? Is this serving the story? So we always come back to that. Are we protecting the actors? Are we serving the story?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay.
And it can be either intimacy or combat.
Okay.
Tell us the funniest thing you remember.
Funniest. Well, it most of them happen to myself as a fighter. There's so many. Well, I'll tell one at a Renaissance fair. Where we were fighting in the living chess, and I was really proud of this fall that I had learned how to do. And it was, if you've ever seen like a banana, an old comedy banana peel pratfall where like the legs fly up and the body hits the ground flat like a plank, I had figured out how to do that safely. And I was really proud of it. So I was supposed to take what looked like somebody's elbow to the face. And it was supposed to knock me out. And then I would do this feet up in the air fall. I practiced it, was so excited and enthusiastic about it. And the day that we did it, the first day we did it live, I was too enthusiastic. And I... It was beautiful. Feet went up in the air, head went back, and I hit my head instead of protecting myself. Oh. I lost my technique, and I knocked myself out in the middle of the show.
No.
In the middle of the show.
Oh, no.
And I tell this story because I'm here and I'm okay. But I was supposed to win the fight. I was supposed to come back and win the fight, and I was out cold. So they have to, like, you know, it's all these people trying to improvise
what to do.
I get, you know, the actors who are playing the EMTs, you know, come out and in their costume and put me on a little stretcher and take me to the real EMT tent, and there I wake up.
How long were you out?
Not very long. Maybe a minute. Probably not even that long. And then they were like, well, you can't fight anymore this week because, you know, we think you're probably concussed. So, you know.
Now, did you go back and do that technique again in the future?
I did, yeah. I actually just taught it to a bunch of adults at a workshop in Denver.
Wow, you travel to do this
too? I do, yep. There's a couple of national workshops that, regional workshops, I think we're calling them now. So one I've been to a few times now is in Denver with my good fight friend, Carrie Colton, at Denver Metropolitan University. And then at Southeast Missouri State University, Dueling Arts, which is the organization that I am certified in stage combat through, hosts a big workshop there. So I travel to Cape Girardeau, Missouri. I've been to New Orleans to teach.
Wow.
Yeah. So wherever there's a need, I like telling stories. So.
Wow, you have opened up a whole new area of awareness for theater for me now. Wow, I'm just so. I've abandoned all my other usual questions because this is so interesting.
Yeah, it's really amazing that these two art forms are really getting recognition and attention in the industry, especially intimacy, and it's just continuing to grow and
evolve.
Well,
with you moving, I'm concerned that there won't be anybody here to help our local theaters.
Well, there are a few people that I know have started going through training that I've worked with that were like, how can I learn more about this? And I have been thinking about, you know, maybe trying to do something, put a workshop together, just like an intro for directors and stage managers and anybody that wants to come. I'm here till January. So, you know, it just to give people some of the basic tools and then kind of point them in the way to say, hey, we need more advocates. So if you want to do this, here's some options. So you're maybe reaffirming my hunch that I should do that.
Oh, I think that's a critical area to explore and fill that gap.
Yeah.
So, wow, do you have any?
Yeah, I really think that sometimes maybe people knowing that service is going to be offered at a play would make them more comfortable even auditioning, to know that it's not something that maybe I've never been in a play where I've been in the romantic role,
right,
and I just don't want to do anything to embarrass myself,
yeah,
but now I know that there's going to be someone, not just a random not that directors are random, so no one get offended out there, but just, you know what I mean? Like someone that's really going to hone in on that. So they're going to make me comfortable and the other person comfortable. I think I would be more likely to audition for things.
Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah. If you are a company that has a show coming up with intimacy in it and you or someone that you're going to hire somebody or you have somebody on your staff who's going to bring these tools in, I absolutely think it would be beneficial to advertise that on your casting or at least make that clear in your auditions that, hey, we're going to be working with somebody.
That's
a great point.
That is a real asset.
Mm-hmm.
Asset. I will come back to two of my usual questions. Because now I can't go into your past because we've gone on for so long, but well, I'm glad. What does community theater mean to you?
Gosh, so many things. It's home. Not just for me, for a lot of people. I am a person that I seem extroverted, but I don't make friends easily. I get along with people easily, but I don't have closeness with a lot of people.
That's typical among actors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, community theater, you know, I told you we bounced around. I was always ending up in different places. And then, anytime I was somewhere new, if I could find a community theater, I could find a family. I could find somebody. When I first went to Western, it was the community theater, you know, while I was waiting to get into the big shows that made me feel like I was home. When I first moved here, being cast at the, you know, I showed up at the Spotlight Theater at an audition for Tarzan back in 2019 and didn't know them at all, but had heard good things. And they cast me in the show, and it was like, we were fast friends. They were inviting me, you know, out to dinner with people and just trying to get to know me. And, all the theaters have been like that. Everyone I've had the chance to work with, it's fast friends, fast family, people you always know you can go to. A lot of my friends recently, the joke that's going around is, you know, it's so hard to make friends as an adult. It's not a new joke, but it's something we're talking about, right?
I don't
consider it
a joke. I consider it
it's
very
not.
Serious.
Yeah, it's being like in memes and online. This idea that it's really hard to make friends as an adult. And I always say, I've never felt that way, because just find a theater. Do a play. If you feel alone and you don't have absolutely crippling stage fright, audition for a show, or do stage manage, work the box office, usher, pass out programs. If all you have is one night, if you want to make a fast friend, that's community theater, and a long friend, because yeah. The friends I still have in Alaska, almost exclusively people I've met in the community theater.
Okay. Last question.
Okay.
How long have you been in the quad? That's not the last question.
Sure. We moved July 2019, so about almost
okay,
a little
so
over
you
6 years.
Have some history in the quad city. Well, it depends. This question.
I see.
Okay, it's Friday night.
Okay.
I don't have anything else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I go to a play when there's so much going on in the Quad Cities? Slowing down a little bit now with the winter season coming mm-hmm. upon us. Why should I go to a play instead of something else?
Well, do you like traveling on a budget? Because if you want to go somewhere new, go to the theater. You want to visit a place you've never been, go to the theater. You want to learn about a job or experience you've never had, go to the theater. You want to try something new, but you're too scared to do it yourself, watch somebody else do it in a show at the theater. Do you need a laugh? There's at least two comedies going on at any given moment in the Quad Cities, or comedy sports, improv shows. You need a cathartic cry, go to the theater. You need to process the world that we're living in, go to the theater. You need to just remember that there's other people in the world with you, go to the theater.
That is beautiful.
Thank
really,
you.
That is beautiful. Well, Lily Blauen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And best wishes for your move back to Florida.
Thank you. Thanks. We'll be back. We both have family here, so we'll definitely be visiting.
Awesome.
You'll see
awesome.
Us again.
Okay, so that wraps it up for Footlights. I'm Chris Hicks.
And I'm Alicia Haynes.
Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at wvik.org or by downloading the WVIK app.